very good Tuesday. Welcome to this episode of My Ag Life Daily News Podcast. I'm Lori Boyer in for Sabrina Halverson. Today marks the first day in this series featuring information from the Tree Nut Conference that was held here in California last week. Taylor Chalstrom with the My Ag Life Daily News Podcast will start us off with information from that conference right after this.
My Ag Life and Citrus is brought to you by Soil and Crop Incorporated, your number one resource for sustainable crop nutrition by putting nature to work for you.
Last week, Tulare, California played host to the annual Tree Nut Conference, drawing attendees from across the U.S. It was days of power-packed networking, education, and information. And attending that event was the My Ag Life Daily News reporter, Taylor Chalstrom.
I got the chance to speak with Karen Ross, California Department of Food and Agriculture's Secretary of Ag, at last week's California Tree Nut Conference about some of CDFA's priorities for the tree nut industry. Secretary Ross was adamant about the efforts that CDFA will be partaking in moving forward. Here are some of those priorities and why CDFA is focusing on them.
Yeah, so tree nuts are really such a huge economic driver for California, but they're a healthy, nutritious product. They've got sustainability goals. They really, you know, they epitomize what makes California agriculture so great. And we can grow almonds and pistachios and walnuts that can't be grown in many other places. So it's important that we understand the industry and the needs of the industry and what's impacting the industry. Obviously, water. I can't make water. I wish that I could. If I could, I would fill up our reservoirs and our rivers.
Oh, yeah.
But I mentioned some of the things in our recently passed budget. At the Department of Water Resources, for community projects, the continued implementation supporting those groundwater sustainability agencies, that's going to be very, very important. What we've done through the State Water Resources Control Board to try to streamline the permits for on-farm groundwater recharge, floodmar, managed aquifer recharge, that's where our orchards and our vineyards have a real opportunity to do something of great benefit. And then just because of the loss of chill hours, extreme high temperatures, extreme weathers that are coming at us because of a changing climate, we've really focused on climate smart agriculture. Mm. We have this year in our budget, and they're out for grants now for the next 4 months, on-farm water use efficiency, our SWEEP program. Anybody who's trying to upgrade their irrigation system, energy efficiency pumps or solar. We just released Monday $75 million for healthy soils, which is remarkable because the last 3 years we've had $40 million. Now in 1 year we've increased it to $75 million. That's based around time-tested, scientific-based natural resource conservation soil health practices, that ability to draw carbon from the atmosphere and store it in our ground, increase that soil organic matter, improve water holding capacity, improve nutrient cycling, and help biodiversity. Most people forget that a fourth of the world's biodiversity is there. We've got on-farm, whole farm conservation planning grants. We have $15 million for a pollinator habitat program. That's a new one for us. Obviously, our friends in the tree nut industry with the many partnerships like Pollinator Partnership, the California Pollinator Coalition, we've got lots of partners at the table, farmers, conservation organizations working together to improve the health of all of our pollinators. That's just a few of the things I talked about.
California Governor Gavin Newsom also approves of CDFA's priorities for the tree nut industry moving forward.
The governor is very interested. He has a deep appreciation for what agriculture has done throughout our history, but he also sees agriculture, because we are leaders, we are the number one ag state, we grow things that can't be grown in many places around the world. He's constantly saying, what's the vision for agriculture for the next decade? Because he knows there's going to be more innovation. It's going to come faster. He hears about some of the technologies. He wants to know about that. He cares deeply about its sustainability. And the First Partner is very interested in this. We have Farm to School. We have $30 million this year, $60 million in total for the next 2 years to really better connect school nutrition programs with local farmers to do more local procurement.
That's great.
It's very awesome. And we really want to put an emphasis on climate smart agriculture because we know that's how we're going to farm for generations to come.
To ensure the success of these priorities for the tree nut industry, CDFA is helping to support growers in implementing them.
Yeah, so there's been several things. I call it our secret sauce ingredients because we get approached by a lot of different countries about how are you doing this. One is we base it on the science programs that have been time-tested by USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service. We've really stressed voluntary incentives are the way to, you know, empower farmers to do the problem solving and to pick from a menu of options that work for where you farm. Farming is very place focused, right?
Yes.
So, you know, having voluntary practices, demonstration projects, especially with some of the practices that may not be used as often, funding a demonstration project with either UC Cooperative Extension or a local resource conservation district or County Farm Bureau that will do a demonstration and the trials and then do field days, or, you know, those are really, they've proven to be very effective ways of having farmers get together, peer-to-peer learning, ask the questions.
Yeah.
And then we've invested in technical assistance. We have, with the University of California Cooperative Extension, we have 10 community educators all about climate smart agriculture. They are focused on reaching hard to reach populations, traditionally underserved farmers, farmers who may be immigrants and English is not their first language, mm-hmm. really providing support to apply for the grant and then do the paperwork that's involved with doing that. So that all of those have really helped us grow this program, and we're excited for the next chapter. And that's why it's so great to have organizations like yours that put on these kinds of events. So, because I know I used to be in the wine grape sector. They used to love the trade shows. I'd kick the tires and, you know, check out the new technology and decide, well, will crop prices support if I go for this new gadget this year? We know how that goes. But then to do some of these sidebar conferences and invite people like me to be able to share some of that information, I really appreciate it.
Secretary Ross is also a big advocate for the new California Pollinator Coalition, as is the Department of Food and Ag, and the coalition has big plans for protecting California pollinators moving forward.
I was so enthusiastic about this because it really is, it's a broad-based organization, over 20 organizations that represent state and federal government, Natural Resource Conservation Service, State Department of Food and Agriculture, Resource Conservation Districts, the University of California Cooperative Extension. And then we've got all these private organizations, Farm Bureau, Ag Council, Almond Board of California, Western Growers. And we have these wonderful conservation partners like the Pollinator Partnership, like Environmental Defense, like, you know, Audubon and others. This is the way for us to really show people what's possible when we work together. You know, there's that old saying that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's why I get very excited about bringing these types of coalitions together, that we can really focus on everything we have in common and not where our differences are.
Yes, no, that is a really excellent sentiment. And I'm glad you spoke about the fact that so many, you know, organizations and people are coming together for this coalition, because obviously the topic of pollinators in California is extremely important and can be divisive amongst some. So I'm glad you guys are bringing some light to it.
Yeah, and obviously one of my hopes is that by bringing this type of a coalition together, we can really focus with our regulatory sister agencies to provide some regulatory certainty when it comes to potential listings on endangered species. You know, there's safe harbor provisions within that act, and we want to make sure that farmers doing right on the land don't have to worry about getting fined for something where they're just trying to do the right thing by helping the health and the ability of our pollinators to do what pollinators do. So I'm excited that I think this is the type of coalition that can make a difference there.
Well, fantastic. I'm glad to hear that you're excited for it. We're excited for it. And Karen, thank you for coming to this conference and talking about all these really important issues. We really appreciate you being here.
It's great to be in Tulare. Thank you.
We'll continue on with more coverage of last week's Tree Nut Conference with Taylor Hallstrom right after this quick break.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. D-Sol, formulated by AgroPlanté, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. D-Sol will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlanté's D-Sol flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With D-Sol, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlanté today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplanté.com.
News continues today on My Daily Ag Life News podcast. I'm Lori Boyer with you once again. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has reported its second confirmed case this year of wolves killing livestock. Five calves were attacked and injured last month on a private ranch in eastern Siskiyou County, and two of the cattle had to be euthanized, according to the state. While there were other reports of possible gray wolf attacks on livestock this year, the only other confirmed killing was in May. That incident happened in eastern Plumas County when an adult cow was killed, according to a state Fish and Wildlife report. Ranchers in the area have spread the word about the recent wolf attacks and are on the lookout for signs of wolves, he said. No one, though, has attempted to shoot or harm any wolves. Supply chain issues are challenging the agricultural sector, and farmers and ranchers hoping for quick solutions may be out of luck. DTN says a House Ag Committee recently held a hearing focused on transportation problems that are slowing the export of goods and commodities across the U.S. and the world. The Associated Press reports a significant backlog of ships entering U.S. waters out west and fewer ships making a voyage back across the ocean as a big reason that U.S. exports have slowed down. Greg Dowd, a former U.S. Trade Representative Chief Ag Trade Negotiator, says the logistical problems are not going to get solved soon. So much of the U.S. ag exports are in containers, so the lack of containers heading back across the ocean is significant, according to Dowd. He says 80% of what leaves the port of Tacoma, Washington, goes out on backhaul or as agricultural products to Asia, and right now the shipping industry would much rather speed up the process and get those empty containers back to Asia without reloading first. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is mailing ballots this week for the Farm Service Agency County and Urban County Committee elections. Elections are occurring in certain local administrative areas for committee members who make decisions about how federal farm programs are administered locally. To be counted, producers and landowners must return ballots to their local FSA County office to be postmarked by December 6th of 2021. FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau says these committees are a critical piece to the work they do by providing knowledge and judgment as decisions are made about the services they provide. Producers must participate or cooperate in an FSA program to vote in a county committee election. Each committee has from 3 to 11 elected members who serve 3-year terms of office, and at least one seat representing a local administrative area is up for election each year. Newly elected committee members will take effect on January 1st of 2022. And USDA is currently accepting applications for the Pandemic Response and Safety Grant Program. Applications must be submitted electronically through the grant portal at usda-prs.grantsolutions.gov/USDA. They are due by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday, November 22nd. Approximately $650 million in funding is available for the PRS program. Small businesses and nonprofits in the following industries can apply for grants to cover COVID-related expenses such as workplace safety measures, retrofitting facilities for worker and consumer safety, shifting to online sales platforms, transportation, worker housing, and medical costs. Those industries include specialty crop producers, shellfish farming, finfish farming, aquaculture, apiculture, specialty crop, meat and other processors, distributors, and farmers markets. Dairy Management Incorporated, the umbrella organization that oversees the National Dairy Checkoff, has a new leader, Brian Baxter with DMI.
The new Chief Executive Officer of Dairy Management, Inc. is Barb O'Brien, who's no stranger to the organization or farmers. O'Brien has been involved with the Dairy Checkoff for more than 20 years.
What has been so important to me and why I stay, 20 years is a long time to be with one organization, but it's about the farmers and what they do every day to feed people.
DMI Chair Marilyn Hershey, a Pennsylvania dairy farmer, says choosing O'Brien as the new CEO to replace Tom Gallagher was carefully considered, but ultimately an easy decision.
We know that Barb is ready to do this. We know that she is more than capable. We know she has the respect, the vision, the insight to be able to lead Checkoff further. And so it was just exciting to be able to hand the Checkoff reins over to her and allow her to go.
O'Brien has worked with nearly every aspect of the Dairy Checkoff program and was instrumental in launching efforts such as the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, which has united the industry.
The building blocks are in place. They've been put in place over 30 years when you think about not just DMI, but really the enterprise of companies from USDEC to the Innovation Center to Nutrient to GDP. It's an amazing set of companies that are all here to drive trust and sales around the world on behalf of dairy farmers. And the challenge in front of me and us is to now take that to a next level, a new level, to ensure we're doing everything we can to deliver for farmers.
Even with the strong foundation and programs already in place, O'Brien says she'll continue to forge partnerships, innovate, and seek new ways to build sales and trust in dairy.
We need to continue to examine what we do and change where we need to change. And although there have been amazing results that we've been able to generate over the years, the environment's complex. We are increasingly reliant on the global marketplace for new volume. So we need to bring new solutions and make hard choices within the program to make sure we are efficiently and effectively investing the farmers' dollars.
I'm Brian Baxter reporting.
And the U.S. Meat Export Federation says retail demand and zero-duty access are helping to drive red meat exports to Central America and to new heights. Joe Sheely, Vice President of Communications with USMEF.
Central America has been a star performer for U.S. beef and pork exports in 2021, with beef exports up nearly 60% from a year ago and pork exports nearly 50% ahead of last year's record pace. Lucia Ruano, U.S. Meat Export Federation representative in the region, has more on the factors driving this growth in this USMEF report.
Due to the pandemic, everybody had to be more creative on creating new business and new ways of getting to the end consumer. Different channels open this year. We have like the delivery platforms that are new in the region. We also have the increase of sales volume that we see in retail stores. People used to just eat the U.S. meats in the restaurants. They were used to that. But now we've been reaching these end consumers that are very happy to learn how they can cook their cuts at home. And we have gained more customers. This has helped to increase the volume of consumption in each of the countries, even though we had a lot of restrictions during the pandemic.
Ruano says exports are also bolstered by zero duties under CAFTA, which now apply to nearly all U.S. meat entering the region.
From this year, all the countries except Panama are able to import pork and beef from the U.S. with 0% tariff. That is an advantage for us and a benefit because the select grade was the one that had the tariff on. It competes with the price of the Nicaraguan beef. So people now can decide, but when they try the U.S. beef, they can perceive the difference and they usually like more the beef from the U.S. Pork already is in the 0%, and even when it had the tariff, it was cheaper to import pork from the U.S. than use the local or the domestic pork. But now it's even more affordable.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
That is a check-in of National Agricultural News. Coming up after the break, USDA News Service's Rod Bain has a special report on the difference between agroecology and biotechnology. Be sure to stay tuned for that.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Tricor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
It is perhaps one of the biggest challenges in agriculture when it comes to the matter of feeding an estimated global population of nearly 10 billion people by the year 2050, and doing so sustainably. The division between agroecology and biotechnology.
Both offer great opportunities to address threats to food security, not only in Uganda, but sub-Saharan Africa as well. Pitting them against each other in a binary frame of either or undermines the complexity of challenges surrounding smallholder farming systems.
The thoughts of North Carolina State University's Naseeb Mugwanya at a recent World Food Prize panel discussing the subject. The term agroecology is defined in the dictionary as the application of ecological principles to ag practices and systems. Yet that does not necessarily mean organic or regenerative farming. And according to panelists, it does not mean agroecology and biotechnology can't coexist and are not compatible with each other. Mugwanya says this division, based in part on global political pressure, will not feed the entire world over the next three decades, especially in his home continent of Africa.
The threats to food security are quite dire, ranging from the changing climate to chronic pests and diseases, and now the cross-cutting issues such as the COVID-19 pandemic. Addressing these challenges needs not either biotech or agroecology, but both.
Iowa State University Associate Professor Walter Souza notes that what will bridge the divide between perceptions of agroecology and biotech, particularly in developing nations and regions of the world, is continued research in both realms.
We need more investment to provide capacity for research and development, including training more scientists for Africa.
Particularly hands-on, science-based education in youth populations and advancing practical innovations and tools. Mugwanya believes the best way to reconcile agroecology and biotechnology is putting both in the hands of the farmer.
How the great Norman Bowler said, take it to the farmer, and they will choose the best of biotech and agroecology depending on what works best in their unique farming context.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Rod, thank you very much for that report. Veterans Day is coming up this Thursday. In honor of Veterans Day, I thought I'd share a little bit of information and history. So according to History.com, Veterans Day originated as Armistice Day on November 11th of 1919, the first anniversary of the end of World War I. Congress passed a resolution in 1926 for an annual observance, and November 11th became a national holiday beginning in 1938. Unlike Memorial Day, Veterans Day pays tribute to all American veterans, living or dead, but especially gives thanks to living veterans who served their country honorably during war or peacetime. A big shout out and a big note of appreciation to all of our veterans. And that concludes this show for today. If there is a topic you'd like to hear more about, be sure to send Sabrina Halverson an email. She's at sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer in for Sabrina Halverson today. And from the JCS marketing team, thank you for listening.